Meeting to order. The time is 1:40. With us today is Representative Moses, Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Co-Chairman Representative Stoltz, Vice Chairman Representative Stoltz, Representative Parker, and myself, Representative Myers. Today we have just one bill to take up, House Bill 81, Contractor License Enforcement. Last time we took this up was last week. We did close the public testimony on it. We held this over for primarily to look at the fiscal notes to make sure that the fiscal notes made sense, and we've since got clarification on those, and I'm okay with those. Was there anything else in the interim that's come up? Looks like we do have one amendment that's coming around.
That's just an amendment to discuss. Representative Buck.
Does that go with this amendment?
That's correct.
Okay. Let's bring the sponsor of the bill up. John Fittner. Is there any other questions before we get started on addressing any amendments that may come up? Okay, if not, then this amendment looks like yours, Representative Holm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment was brought forth.
Move
the amendment.
Okay, amendment one has been moved. Is there objection?
Object for discussion.
Okay. And who objects? Go ahead, Representative Holm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment was brought forth by a former staffer of mine who acts as a handyman. I mean, that's how he makes his living now. And his concern was that it would take away an awful lot of the business that he currently has, which apparently is not something that is normally done by most folks in the industry. And I guess what I brought this forward was to give him an airing on this. He drove all the way from Fairbanks to Juneau to speak on this, and I would like him to speak this amendment if you could, Mr. Chairman, because it affects him. He determined that it affected him adversely, and he certainly would like to have his moment in the sun if at all possible. So
okay.
With your indulgence, could we have Mr. Larkin speak to this?
All right. Yeah, that'd be fine. Mr. Larkin, please join us. Okay. You could, for the record, tell us your name and affiliation. It's dangerous, but...
My name is Todd Larkin. Do you need my address?
No, just your affiliation. Contractor?
Yeah, I'm under the, what's nicknamed the handyman license right now in the services licenses.
Very good. Go ahead.
Representative Holm was, through the chair, pretty much correct in that after doing reviewing the bill myself and doing some reading, a little bit of research, and then requesting from a couple of offices my representative and kindly enough Representative Holm to speak with legislative legal and to confirm my opinion or my findings if they needed to confirm that. We found out that under the existing language in the law that is about to be augmented by enforcement under this bill, the pretty much common business practice of a guy with my license going to having a general contractor, fully licensed, registered home builder, bonded general contractor, if that guy wants to have me on his site to do what I would call miscellaneous projects, I call them punch lists, right now the way the law reads, that's precluded and therefore would set me up, if I was to continue taking that work, would set me up for what would be the new fine structure at upwards of $1,500 a day for accepting that work. Now, the work we're talking about is maybe he's building a $160,000 home and he has me do one wall of accent siding or finish out soffits or hang three doors. Whatever it is, it's the miscellaneous stuff between the trade contractors. And after, at about $3,200 worth of work, I'm all done with the punch list, we shake hands, and I go my way. What has happened there in the strictest reading of the law, we discovered, is that on page 4, if you gentlemen have a copy of the bill, on line 18, I'm pretty sure it is, under exemption number 8, exemption number 8 starts out with the first sentence to say, if you're a handyman and you're working under $5,000, great, this law doesn't apply to you at all. If, however, you exceed your license by working on a project that is valued over your $5,000, either you yourself as the same contractor do so, or working for a different contractor, your exemption goes away, you're now going to be subject to these fines. And the amendment would basically say, if the same contractor is working on a project that is over $5,000, he's exceeding his license and therefore should be fined. But if you're working for a different contractor who is the interested party in the project, you're just performing a work, he's your customer, and you stay under your cap, he shouldn't be punished for that. It's common business practice. It slipped by in the when this law was very recently amended, I think last year. I think it slipped by because handymen, you know, they're not busy reading the changes in the law, and they bought their license 2 years ago and so on, and there wasn't significant enforcement, so it wouldn't be brought to light by people starting to get in trouble. And so I think it was just an unfortunately poorly written law the first time. It reached too far accidentally, I think. And now I've confirmed legally that it would definitely preclude my business practices. I might have stumbled a little bit, but I'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay, I think we have a few. Representative Holm?
Yeah, thank you, Todd. One of the questions I brought forward earlier was, you go to work for a general contractor. Do you give the general contractor the same release for workers' compensation as a corporate officer would do, or something akin to that?
I do, but it's at this point it's become, through market forces, it's become almost not worth the paper it's written on. Although this bill doesn't address that issue of liability for a workers' comp situation, mm-hmm. I understand the concern. And last year, the wording that passed through the legislature last year to create this new title of project owner, which could be anywhere from the general contractor to the owner company or whatever, the project owner ultimately is reliable for no more than what would be workers' comp coverage even if they weren't carrying a policy. So everybody on a job site now, regardless of if you gave a waiver or not, is covered, is forced to be covered by a workers' compensation scheme. And so I was previously signing waivers for anybody who wanted it and suggesting them upon entering a job site, but it won't matter if I've got 10 waivers. The legislation last year forced that issue.
Well, I appreciate that, Chair. If I could follow up, I guess the question was, do you then, in essence, become an employee at that point in time, and have all the rights of an employee under workers' compensation law? You know.
If I am,
Mr. Arthur, if you could address the committee.
I'm sorry, sir.
We don't want you to have a personal conversation.
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, I apologize.
That's okay.
I'm definitely out of practice. But through the chair, Representative Holm, and the committee members, my understanding at this point is that I'm trying to clarify the question in my mind. The insurance companies now, with the somewhat ambiguous wording of last year's legislation, are insisting that anybody who comes on that job site, if they're hurt, they will be basically considered an employee as it pertains to workman's comp. The law, even the strict reading of the law, disagrees with that, and the law also states I am not an employee. That's why I have a license. And these are my customers, and that's easily demonstrable by my list of other customers and the fact that those contractors don't have control over me, really. So, in an evidentiary basis and by the law, I am definitely not an employee, but the way that the market falls down, I would be, whether I like it or not, I would be an employee under workman's comp. But again, it's not, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, it's not in this bill. That issue is not in this bill.
Anything else? Less than anyone?
No.
Representative Hawker has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's more, more of an observation to the committee. Looking at the proposed amendment here, which seems in some ways, I think it makes this a certain sense. I don't think one's attempting here to restrict legitimate work performed by legitimate handymen, not attempting to circumvent other aspects where we start getting into contractor law. I think the second sentence provides the assurance or the statute that we're looking for to protect us, to protect the state, because there's that clause that says, you know, basically this work on a project or another, the aggregate price of which all other items is less than $5,000. The exemption does not, now we're creating out a couple of carvings, does not apply when the work is the second question here, the key, when the work is divided into contract amounts less than $5,000 for the purpose of evasion of this chapter or otherwise. That purpose of evasion or otherwise seems to me to give us sufficient latitude to pursue unscrupulous handymen, of course, no reference, but if there isn't a scrupulous intent to circumvent, we've got a clause there that catches it, and I think it may be lightening up a little bit on what might be misconstrued as restrictions on the Labor Handyman Services Bill might well be served by this amendment.
I agree. Thank you.
And so, if it's appropriate at this time, I would remove my objection to the amendment.
That's fine. Go ahead. You remove your objection?
I have, Mr. Chairman, I remove my objection to the amendment number one.
Okay, is there any other objection? Go ahead.
I'd like to maintain my objection so I can hear from the sponsor.
Sure.
and anybody else that might jump up and down and scream about it. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. We really should hear too from the Department of Labor. Are you prepared to comment on that, and as well as somebody from Home Builders Association? Okay, since Representative Stoltz has got an objection, let's have the sponsor comment on that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Bittner. I'm staff to Representative Anderson. As to this particular amendment, because it's outside of the scope of what our bill was trying to do, and we had just received it this morning, we do not know the full implication of what this will mean, what exactly this language will do to current contracting laws. I would recommend that we probably defer to the actual contractors in the Department of Labor on this.
Okay, very good, thank you. Let's see, is Mr. Mitchell here at the Department of Labor?
Yeah. Hello, Greg Mitchell, Director of Labor Standards and Safety at Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Basically, what I see happening, you know, last year there was a change in the level of projects that workers who were working under the handyman license could perform. And as I understood it, the only change was that the level dropped from 10,000 down to 5,000. And I believe the intent at that time was to make sure that the line was clearer as to what size projects people who were operating with a handyman license could legally perform. When you start talking about a $10,000 job, there are an awful lot of subcontractors out there who are licensed and insured, and you know, if they've got employees, they're carrying workers' comp on those employees. Electrical contractors, plumbing contractors, drywall contractors, roofing contractors, all of those specialties you know, on a single family house are running right in that, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 range. And so as I understood it, these subcontractors kind of wanted to delineate themselves from the handyman, which essentially is just a business license. It doesn't require any special bonding or insurance or, you know, anything like that. It's just a different category of business license. So that these specialty contractors wanted to delineate themselves and kind of eliminate the possibility that there might be, you know, a competition there between them and these other groups. You know, changing this or accepting this amendment would be a fairly significant change, where now, you know, any size project would be open for, you know, a person who gets a handyman business license to work on, you know, which then is going to require, you know, the general contractors in the group can probably speak to what impact that's going to have on their operations, but it's going to require those general contractors to assume more liability and risk than if they had licensed subcontractors doing the work with their own insurance and coverages. So hopefully that kind of explains what I see as far as what's happening with this amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Any questions from Mr. Meeting? Representative Holt.
Just a point, Mr. Mitchell, through the chair. What you're saying is they could work on larger projects, but they could not work in the aggregate a total more than $5,000 worth of work. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Holm, that's correct. The current law restricts individuals with a handyman license from working on any job that's over $5,000. So, you know, when you start talking about a house project or, you know, there's going to be parts of that job that are less than $5,000, but a handyman still is prohibited under the current law from doing those small parts of the job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Holmes. So let me see if I understand this correctly, that they could be working on multiple jobs, but none of them could be more than $5,000. Is that correct? So in other words, you could be working on four $4,000 jobs all at the same time, and that would be okay.
That's correct. Right. We're talking about smaller projects. You know, I mean, it might involve a roof repair, or, you know, some window replacement, or decks, or, you know, those kinds of jobs that would fall in the under $5,000 category, but they're separate jobs. They're not part of a bigger project.
If I may, let me ask you another question. It sounds like it's a pretty big step going from a handyman to a contractor. You've got workers' comp issues, you've got with a more expensive license. How big a step is this? I mean, is it significant or?
Well, it's fair. I guess I can't speak to exactly what the difference is. I know that there's a different license cost. There's, you know, bonding and insurance are the main issues. And I think we heard from Mr. Deschmet at the last meeting where he was saying for his level of work, which he's a general contractor, it's $5,000 to $8,000 a year for his liability insurance. You know, and so there's some significant costs there. I'm sure the specialty contractors are not that high, you know, but there's some significant costs. Workers' comp, it really doesn't matter if a person is a licensed contractor, subcontractor, or a handyman. The costs are going to be essentially the same. If they're employing people in certain categories, then that's where the workers' compensation requirements come into play. It doesn't really matter if you're a licensed contractor or not. It's if you employ people, then you have the workers' comp liability.
Okay, very good. Any other Representative
Schnell? Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, then, if you're a handyman and you go on a job site, somebody's house, and you're injured, what happens to you?
I don't know the answer to that question. Probably depends, through the chair, sorry about that, on what, you know, the courts would decide probably. If it, you know, it first go to a board decision and then it could be appealed from there. You know, it's initially, I'm sure that worker, there would be a presumption that they were covered if they were a handyman.
Well, I'm on my line of work, that being a general contractor, I'm required to make sure that all my subcontractors have the proper credentials to be able to come on a job site. And whether that's, and I'm not a home builder, so that's why I'm asking this, for general construction or field work. But I know that if I don't require those papers and one of their employees get hurt, then there's a real good possibility that I'm going to pay for it. And so I'm curious as to, or the corporation that I'm working for may pay for it. And so I'm just trying to get this in my mind, a handyman subcontractor versus in general, and trying to figure out how the work, just the work comp issue itself works. Causes me some concern.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, I don't have a detailed knowledge of the workers' compensation workings, and so I can't provide the expertise you're looking for. Sorry about that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Stoll. Representative Stoll?
Mr. Chairman, not for this witness, but I don't want to listen to all of them again, but if there's just at least maybe just one person in the whole building.
Sure. Okay. Probably go ahead and do that.
On this.
You bet.
Not that I wouldn't treasure hearing more.
Okay. Let's see. I think... Mr. Wilson, you're representing the Home Builder Association, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, come on
up.
You're the man.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Mr. Pitt, you can join us.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Al Wilson. I am a general contractor based out of Juneau. Also represent the Alaska State Home Building Industry as their legislative chairperson, co-chair. I guess my comments regarding the amendment is, this is a enforcement bill. I think this handyman issue is a separate issue. As you can tell, there's lots of implications about how it affects me as a general contractor and the way I do business day to day. In my viewpoint, handymen are simply truly that, handymen. They don't necessarily have a role to play in my day-to-day business. If I have a job for $500 that I need to subcontract out, I'm going to subcontract that to a subcontractor. It protects me from a liability standpoint. You know, the workers' comp issue is taken care of. My client's protected. I'm protected a little bit. The way the handyman issue kind of relates to the construction industry is that we see our employees eventually go out and work on their own to get a handyman's license. And then they, you know, they get a little more experience and they move up and they finally get a subcontractor's license, and they step up to the plate with the bonding and the general liability and eventually the workers' comp policy, and they start hiring employees. And then they step up to a general contractor, then they eventually get their residential endorsement, and they become competitors at some point. And I think that the system overall, in the big picture, works with that with that whole step-by-step process. And I think the handyman, when you throw that into the mix now, something there at the same level as a specialty contractor, I think we've muddied the waters. And our goal with this enforcement bill is to help clean up some of those issues, and I really would hate to see us introduce this the ability to muddy those waters even more. Did you want to add to that?
Go ahead. For the record, my name is John Bitney. I'm under contract with the Alaska State Home Builders Association, and I'm registered as their lobbyist. I can't add much to that, Mr. Chairman. I would just point out that the way workers' compensation does work is if you come on a job site, the current work comp law has an exemption for you. If you are a sole proprietor business where you're an individual coming onto that site, you're not required under workers' compensation to have your own policy. Irrespective of sort of how some of the laws may work, the underwriting standards on when the insurance company assesses you the premium, if that person who came onto the job site does not have a certificate, they will retroactively increase the premium for the general for the time that that person was on the job site. So I just wanted to point that out.
Very good. Any questions for anyone? Richard Holm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then, Mr. Bittner, on that point, then it falls back upon the general contractor themselves to protect themselves. Is that not the point? So I guess my question is, why should they be precluded from hiring someone who may pose a greater risk to them than someone who would be, let's say, a subcontractor with their own workers' compensation policy?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holm, it's sort of their business practice. It's up to them to sort of understand the risk that they're taking if they have an individual come onto a job site, whether or not they ask for their certificate of work comp. Some do, some don't. But essentially you're correct, but I guess it's sort of a question of exacerbating, I think, what has been a lot of general contractors have found is very large retroactive assessments on their premium, and a lot of frustration in dealing with what's out there in the market in order to bring people on and get work.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. Representative Holm, I was reluctant to go down this course of discussion, but since it's been brought up, it's a major concern with our industry that currently, if you go to the OCC licensing and purchase a subcontractor's license, you can exempt yourself from workers' comp. So you're testifying and signing your name to a notarized document that you will not hire employees. You come to work for me as a general contractor, you're licensed, you've signed a document, notarized your signature that you're exempt from workers' comp. Which in the eyes of the state is all fine and dandy, everyone's happy, until audit time when my insurance carrier comes in and picks up these sole proprietors, as Mr. Bittner was saying. It's a very confusing thing within the industry. We hope to address that issue. We've attempted in the past to try to clean that language up and look for waivers. Legal experts all tell us that waivers aren't going to work. You can't sign away your rights. And there's a saying amongst us that as the guy leaves the roof and before he hits the ground, he becomes an employee, and that's pretty much how the industry, insurance industry, looks at these individuals. So, and to make this matter even worse, is that if I subcontract to a subcontractor and he gives me a bill for $10,000, some of that might reflect materials, some of that might reflect his labor. Unfortunately, at audit time, that whole $10,000 gets added over to my payroll premium, and I get to add him on as at my contractor rate, which is the highest rate that I have on my classification chart. So it is a mess.
Yeah, I know.
Well, thank you for adding that on, Mr. Chairman. I guess what I'm still wrestling with this as well, as I think we all are, is that we don't want to impede the progress of entrepreneurial people in this state. We want them to have an opportunity to be as aggressive as they can, as they personally can be, but in the same token, we don't want to make some difficult situation for the contractors of the state either. So I'm kind of wrestling with this as well.
I appreciate that, Representative Holman. And I think Mr. Wilson brought up a good point in that this, I'm not sure this is the right vehicle to do what we're attempting to do. This is more of an enforcement bill. I guess it works, but I'm not real comfortable with it. All right, any other questions? Representative Croft.
Yeah.
Oh, for the record, Representative Croft is here. Sorry.
That's right. The old law, in effect, distinguished between two different operational concepts for this exemption. The operation or the job, whether different or same contractors, the key was what job are you working on? And then this other one, which is the intent to evade. So you're intentionally dividing up the contracts to evade that. With the amendment, we're really taking that. Are you doing, I mean, the question before was pretty simple. Are you doing $5,000 worth of work on this job? Operation is the term. And now we're going to say something different. It's, are you doing $5,000 for a particular contractor? So I take it under this amendment, I could do 4,000 work for the for any of the particular subs. I could be making whatever multiple $4,000 contracts and be working an aggregate of 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 on the job, as long as I just make different contractual relationships with different companies. Is that right?
To the chair, that's kind of the, where I'm going as well, and that's why we're somewhat uncomfortable with the amendment.
Can you tell me, now that I know that I've got it at least factually right, what is wrong with that? What's wrong with somebody? I mean, I can see how it's sort of avoiding this 5,000, but what does it bring that's bad to the practice?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, I think what we've done is we've just put all the subcontractors out of business by doing that. You've set up two classifications or two standards at which you can accomplish the same thing, and whether that's good or bad, I'm not sure. I think it makes
matters. You don't have to be a sub anymore. You could just be a handyman.
Exactly. You could be a handyman. And there might be some benefits that I'd have to kick that around. But I think from my perspective, and my first thought is strictly from the whole workers' comp and liability side of things, that I would much rather have my people be licensed and insured and add another level of protection between me and them and their employees.
The main things you have to do to go from a handyman to a sub is more insurance, more bonding. What are the major steps there?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, currently to get a what they're calling a handyman license, you have to buy your business license. That's it. As a subcontractor, not only do you need the business license, you have to get your subcontractor's license, your bond, as well as your general liability. And then if you're going to employ employees, you have to have workers' comp policy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Croft. And Mr. Wilson, we talked a little bit earlier, too, about the bonding and insurance. How much would that be for a subcontractor, do you think? And would this be a way for a subcontractor avoiding that by now becoming a handyman? And is the, I guess what I'm trying to find out is that amount such a steep amount that there would be that temptation to.
Mr. Chairman, we had this discussion in the last hearing a little bit. Mr. Smith spoke about it, and since then we've asked some of our subcontractors what they're paying. A little more accurate information. The bonding, $500 to $600 a year for a $5,000 subcontractor's bond. The liability is a little bit bigger range based on your experience, your bringing to the table will affect that rate. But that could be anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 for the specialty folks.
Okay, very good. Thank you. All right, any other questions for these two gentlemen? Representative Kelly.
On page 5, Mr. Chairman, line 2, item 12, and on down through the end of that paragraph, this does not apply to the handyman question. Is that correct?
To the chair, Representative Kelly, that's my understanding as well.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I don't sure. And I wasn't here the other day when we did this, but did we hear from the folks that out there that typically build a home, occupy it for a short period of time, and then build another one? I mean, why are we trying to get that crowd with this bill?
Representative Kelly, I think we're addressing the bill, not the amendment here. Is it? Do we need to address the bill to get your question on the amendment? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead.
And I apologize, I wasn't here the other day, but so I'm just wondering why we are addressing this in this bill and targeting those folks. And that's my question.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Kelly, this was that language that was included in the House Labor and Commerce, and in discussing sort of what the bill was getting at was we were trying to address, if you will, abuses, problems, and things that came up in the testimony and the discussion. It started off as an enforcement piece to get at ways of sort of being better able to address people who were not registered, who were doing work that they should be. In the course of the testimony, what also came up was is that businesses were not registering as contractors who were operating through what is exemption under 12 here, where, as you can, if you kind of go through and craft what the current law says, it says that if you're acting as your own contractor, you can build one home, duplex, triplex, fourplex, or commercial building every year. And what the testimony has been, and I'm also familiar with, is cases where you have a family of four or five. Each member of the family can build any one of those units under a regular business license every year, which essentially the family is operating a substantial general contracting business that goes far beyond what the intent of the exemption was, which is we believe that the intent was is that if you want to construct your own home and act as your own general contractor, you should be able to do that. But it was intended for you to build your own home, if you will. And so the language that was added here was just sort of felt a sort of a reasonable way by going to every 2 years to still allow someone to do that, but to tighten it up by adding an additional year. And some reference to occupancy so that it could be abused and become a loophole, if you will, for someone to run a substantial general contracting business.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just did we, Mr. Chairman, did we hear a testimony against that? Again, I apologize, I was not here.
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, the Mr. Larkin did express some concerns about how this language was constructed, I believe, at the first house finance meeting.
Okay, and I was looking more for not the handyman angle, but that other crowd that we first spoke to. So we didn't hear from a bunch of negative from that.
No. Other than some of the concerns, Mr. Chairman, from I haven't heard any from anyone else.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's helpful.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. Yeah, yes, it's been a while since. Well, I guess last week when we heard this, but I don't recall any negative testimony either. Okay, any other questions? Thank you both for joining us. Okay, I think we've heard both sides of this issue and Department of Labor. President Stolt, do you still, we have an amendment for us. It's been moved. Do you still have your objection?
Yeah, I think I'll maintain it.
Objection is maintained. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Frost?
Pass.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Hawker?
No.
Representative Holm?
Pass.
Representative Kelly?
No.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
Yes. No. No.
Representative Null?
No.
Representative Meyer?
No.
Representative Prop?
No.
Representative
Holm?
No.
98-16.
Okay, so the amendment fails.
1-8.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Yes, Representative Holm. Hawk.
Mr. Holm would be over there, yes. If I may, just a word of explanation on the record, if I might.
Sure.
I do have an inclination to support the intent and rationale behind the amendment, but listening to the debate, I believe, you know, it is, you know, there's sufficient ramifications of which I don't feel completely comfortable that, you know, I've really postured at this table to make that conclusion with the limited discussion debate, and particularly not having had a hearing through Labor and Commerce on the issue that, I'd just like to, you know, a vote no against the amendment is not necessarily, on my part, a vote against the concept.
Thank you, Representative Hawker, and I would agree with that. I think the amendment and the idea has merit. I'm just not sure this is the vehicle and this is the committee to try to pick that up on. Representative Clinton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, too, wanted to thank Representative Hocker for those comments, because I feel very strongly that I do not want this committee to be passing laws that takes one group of folks out of our industry and puts them under some onerous fine process, which this may well have a potential for doing for small folks that are working in the industry. So with that, thank you very much for your comments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Holmes. Representative Kelly.
Just that train pulled out, so I'm going to hook my car to it. I also feel that way that, as was testified, this almost is an apprentice group that feeds on into the system. And being very supportive of small entrepreneurial operations that sometimes go somewhere, and having done a little bit of that in the family, I'm real hesitant to vote no on that. Maybe some of the committee in language here will help later on for people to figure out what we're trying to do is not to put the horn to the handyman, but to create some definition for the home builders and others that hopefully will leave this law better when we walk into the room. But I'm not sure of that.
Thank you, Richard Kelly. Person Hopper, see what you started. Thank you.
Hey, they all get to talk. No. Even the guy that passed the amendment voted no. So I'm not good.
And Mr. Larkin, thank you for bringing that to our attention. Is there any other amendments to come before us, the committee on this, on House Bill 81? Seeing none, Representative Foster.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and vote H.B. 81 with individual conditions and the dash.
Okay, any objections? Thank you. And zero fiscal notes. Okay. Seeing no objections, the committee moves to committee. Or the bill moves to committee. That concludes our work for today. Tomorrow we do have two more bills to take up that were carried over from last week. House Bill 97, Oaths, Notaries, Public, State Seal, and Senate Bill 60. Which was to extend the Suicide Prevention Council. Representative Hawker, I think you had some discussion with me on that. So
yep, and we are preparing an amendment.
Okay. Very good. And then on Wednesday, we should have the Fast Track Supplemental to start discussing.
Do you expect to pass it out? Okay.
On Wednesday? No.
Okay.
No. We're fast, not that fast. But we definitely would like to have the public hearing and see what the body did to it and see if it's something we can look at. Okay. Yes. Okay. If there's anything else to come before the committee, what? Representative Snow.
Yeah. Members, would you please stay and sign the committee report?
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Snow. Okay. If there's nothing else, we're adjourned.